guys, welcome back to U.S. Paranormal. You have myself, Sue, and Marley. We are going over seances, the history. What else am I missing, Marley?
Hoaxes and tricks.
Yes. People that have practiced it, our pocket goes, all that good stuff. We're going to jump in.
Yeah, and the rise of spiritualism.
Absolutely, which I love. Love, love, love. So I had first documented it in 1760, but Aaron was mentioning seeing documentation even further back. How far back did you go with seeing the spiritualism and seances?
So seance communication can actually be tracked back to the 3rd century. It was considered an occult practice. It brought fear. It was considered dark magic because it established the unknown outside of the realm of God and whatever fanciful spiritual light that had requested a village at that time. But there are instances of quote-unquote seance or as far back as the 3rd century. So if you don't know what the 3rd century is, we're talking about the 1200s.
Yeah, that's such a long time. And I mean, documentation way back then, I mean, I'm surprised you found it because it's so long ago. I mean, I'm sure it goes back way, you know, much further. And, you know, we just don't know because of the documentation or lack of.
Right. And a lot of the... let's be more specific here. Okay. So the term seance wasn't actually coined or wasn't recorded as a thing until 1845. Okay.
And is that when it became like the French term? Or
it comes from the French word sieur, which means to literally set. To sit, seance means to sit. It can also mean a session.
It wasn't actually
recorded as a seance until 1845.
Okay. So it's called a session until 1845, and then the term turned into seance.
Yes, and it was that term of receiving spiritualistic messages from the other side by means of assistive tools.
Yeah. And some of those items might be interesting to mention, like the Ouija board and pendulum and each of those, because it's funny how like people are so anti Ouija board, but yet they use SB7 boxes, which are no different.
It's another form of it.
Yeah, they're all forms of communication. And to me, a seance is like using a session, sitting down, communicating with the deceased. So it doesn't matter what item you're using, whether it's a pendulum, a board, or an SB7, or any of the other newer technology. I mean, it's all the same. I mean, there's just a myth behind them, like the Ouija board. There's hundreds to thousands of different types, and you know, there's all kinds of myths behind that. I mean, they say, oh, they're banned in England, and they're not. And how bad are they? And are you summoning demons? And, I mean, what would be your response to that to the people that are like, oh, it summons demons? And how do you know you're not talking to demons when you're, and especially with children,
Honestly, I mean, you know my opinion on the use of spirit boxes, Ouija boards, rudic dice, things like that. It's very much like, and for our younger listeners, you probably don't have any idea what a payphone is, but it's very much like walking by a ringing payphone and you pick it up. The person on the other side can tell you that they're someone, but they may be someone else. So you just have to be, I'm not fully against them. I think they have their purpose. I think they have their uses, but I think you have to be very careful and you have to really understand how they work in order to use those kinds of things, because they can be portals for other things to come through, and not all things are honest and kind and caring.
Yeah, and I think you have to have a lot of faith, a lot of protection, prayer. The faith, I think, being the biggest thing. If you believe in God and you have that protection surrounding you, I mean, that nothing's going to penetrate that.
Right.
No matter what religion.
Right.
And then there's pendulums, there's the buzzing rods. I mean, did you have more about the Ouija board specifically?
Yeah, but when we're talking about seance, traditionally seances don't use those things. You do find later on in history that you start seeing amalgamations of the Ouija board and the tarot cards. But prior to...
Come on, they were like in the original day, or...
Say that again.
Are you referring to like when people first started doing seances in the original days, or currently you feel like it's less of the items used?
Well, I think like with all forms of communication, things have evolved. The thing I have with seance is you have to really understand where to separate the fact from the fiction, right? Historically, seances were a way to trick people into giving you money by using their turmoil and grief at your advantage. And I'll give you the greatest example. The Fox sisters actually made seances extremely popular. Okay. They literally, and the Fox sisters, if you don't know who they are, the Fox sisters were the first two people to be famous or to become celebrities based on quote unquote a mediumship. Okay. They have what's called the first recorded spiritual rapping, basically it's tapping on a table. Okay. This is in 1848 the 1848 by 1848, the Fox sisters were very famous. Okay. Their names were Margaretta and Kate Fox. And what they did is they told someone that there was a man communicating with them, and he had been murdered in their home, and his bones were buried in the basement. And the gentleman that they were telling this to actually went down into the basement, and he found these bones. And he was like, the Fox sisters are the real deal. They can speak to the dead. And they used this rapping system, this table turning. And it was very simple. And a lot of times during the earlier celebrity of spiritualism or of seances, people would use alphabetics. So they would say, knock, and they would go through the alphabet saying A, B, C, and if it was the letter they wanted, the ghost would knock. And they would stop on that letter. And they could create sentences and have conversations this way. Same with the rapping or the knocking. So they could say two knocks mean no, one knock mean yes. And these were the earliest forms of communication with seance. And the Fox sisters used this to their advantage. They became extremely famous in the U.S., in Europe. It got so bad with their fame that they were even threatened by neighbors, by religious fanatics who didn't want them claiming that they could speak to the dead. They believed it was of Satan and it was demonic and that these are witches. So they really had to watch themselves and take great care in how they moved around their day, because there were people who were wanting to hurt them. Now, their demise came from a very unlikely place. They had a sister named Leah Fox, and she basically came out and said, they're fraud. They are tricking people. They are doing these things. They have special equipment that allows them to be unseen. And then in 1888, the Fox sisters came forward and told the world that they were not actually mediums, that they had created this ruse and that they were cheats. So, I mean, you really have to, but they gave birth to the spiritual movement. I mean, in a way, the guy who actually began the spiritual movement, his name was Alan Kardec, and he turned the phrase tiptology, and a tiptology is a mode of spiritual communication in which spirits lift and tilt tables during seances. They produce rapping sounds. A number of people could sit around a table and hold hands and concentrate and ask questions, and the spirits could do this stuff. So he coined this tiptology. Now,
which that's the same as table tilting.
Yes. So table tilting, so everything that falls under that is called tiptology. Now, that alphabetical one I was telling you about, where they would like say the alphabet, and so they would say like A, B, C, and then they'd hear a knock. So they know it was C.
Yeah.
And then they'd be like D, E, F, and it would hear a knock, and it would be F. So that's called alphabetical.
No,
I mean, very similar, yes. It's probably one of the earliest forms of a verbal Ouija board. But that was called alphabetical tiptology. And you could have a detailed conversation in that manner just by writing down the letters. Automatic writers were born from this kind of ideology, if you will. But like I said, the first recorded of this was in 1848 with Margaret and Kate, and they were deemed as frauds. So people were actually going out and looking to see if these quote-unquote mediums were actually the real deal, or were they using people's pain and suffering as a means in which to gain money. Right.
Yeah, and I see where modern spiritualism reached Europe in the winter of 1852-53, where the table, sitting around the table, became popular. So it was shortly after that it reached over to Europe.
Right, right. And okay, so like the six most common classic tricks that would be used, for example, the Fox sisters. They used spirit rapping. That was that table tilting and the knocking, right? You would hear these mysterious knocks, and people would be like, ooh, it's a ghost. Then there was this thing that became extremely popular because in the 1850s, because it kind of took away the understanding of, well, how could they possibly do it? And that was called manifestation cabinet. And what would happen is it was this cabinet, and the medium would get inside, and in this cabinet it had instruments and things and all kinds of like random stuff, and you would the medium would bring someone on stage and have them tie their wrists, and then they would sit in this box and they would close this curtain, and everyone thought that this person was bound, and the music would play and lights would go off and things would be thrown.
Sounds like those.
The reality is the lights would go. Huh?
It sounds like those things that travel around, and they have the midgets and mirrors and.
Yeah, like a circus or a freak show.
This was actually
a medium performing on a stage for large groups of people. And so what happened is they would actually have a group of people, and the lights would go down and all these things would happen. They would hear music playing and lights would come on and things would happen. And what the reality is that the medium would undo their ties, play all these instruments, do all these things, and then someone would come in through a trap door and retie their wrists. The lights would come on, the curtains would open, everyone was like, oh, my God, they're still bound. It was ghosts.
Yeah, so there was a lot of tricks.
And that became really big in the 1850s, and it was like, it blew up. People were using it all the time, and they were charging lots and lots of money for people to come see this to speak to their so-and-so family, right? And then you had spirit slates, and this was usually a piece of cardboard that was black. And in order to pull this sham off, the black sheet would be cut to the exact size of a picture frame or the shape of a slate that would be laid inside the frame itself. And it would actually be hiding a pre-written message beneath it, right? And when it came time to reveal the slate, the medium would lift the prepared cardboard off of the top of the flap, and it would cover the black slate at the bottom, and then the extra slate was quickly brushed off, and then underneath would be this note, and it would be like, oh my gosh, the ghosts are talking to us. But it was all set up. It was pre-set up,
now,
right?
Now, but nowadays, we believe that, you know, there is accuracy and reputation and such, and not the trickery going on. Is that correct? Like, is that how you believe?
So these are just tricks that people would use to actually fraud other people.
Right.
As a medium myself, I know that a lot of these, like, it's not really necessary. If you're a medium, it's not necessary. Either you're getting images or information, or you can hear them directly. You can just give that information. It's like I tell you during our walkthrough. I give you what I'm told or what I'm given. I only give what I'm given, and there's nothing more.
But for those that don't have that, you know, this may be a technique that, as long as you're safe and you're using the proper precautions and everything, some of these things can work.
Yeah, that's true. Using a communicative form. Automatic writers are a great example of that. People who are automatic writers, they can't do it. It doesn't work unless they're writing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
it's
just a tool to assist in that talent or that gift, if you want to call it.
Yeah. And I was reading, like, the different types. Like, you had mentioned the stage seances where the mediums get up on stage in front of people. And then so there's also a leader assistance where, like, a specific leader is conducted, but they have, like, a small group, and they are the medium and do it. And then, of course, they call it informal social seances within the paranormal, where you're in the cult and you use a planchet or different things. And then there's one called spiritualist seance, which basically sounds the same as formal social or paranormal, where it just says spiritualist and practitioner, psychics and medium hold seances in a circle. For just the
right
type.
And those circular seances start becoming major during and at, well, towards the end and after World War I. You start seeing spiritualist groups coming together in 10s and 20s and doing these large seance circles. And you start seeing the growth of that seance circle. Normally it was a medium standing on a stage performing or communicating with a large group of people, or it was a medium doing it at a table in front of people. There really was no connection until you start seeing the birth of spiritualism. And spiritualism has been around since the Victorian age, since the late 1800s. But it wasn't that big. It wasn't a big deal. It became huge at the turn of the century, especially during World War I. Spiritualism actually became so vast that it almost wiped out the Anglican Church, because everybody believed in their turmoil that they could communicate with the dead by the use of a medium, which I guarantee that there was probably some very skilled and accurate mediums out there. But because of the time and the turmoil, there was also very gifted and skilled frauds out there.
Right. There's always a bad
gap
in every group.
And, you know, I think one of the greatest examples of one of those major frauds is Martha Barrard. She was also known as Eva C. or Ava Carrier. And she used to be able to produce, quote unquote, ectoplasm during her seances. And it was actually recorded on photo, and it was put in a newspaper clipping and a newspaper article, And it said ectoplasm, women fuse ectoplasm during seance. And so what was actually happening is she was stuffing muslin or other similar fabrics into her orifices, her mouth, her nose, and she would add photo clips, and that's what would come through. So she'd put those in there, and people were like, oh, I see a face in the ectoplasm, and this ended up being her downfall, because one of the faces that she used was actually actress Mona Deleuze, King Ferdinand of Bulgaria, and Woodrow Wilson, and they were very much alive. I mean, you can't use people with extreme recognition where people know who they are, and they exposed her deception because of that. So you had gifted mediums who knew what they were doing and were actually doing it, but then you had people like Martha Barad who was frauding people because of her grief.
And there was like a physicist too that devised an apparatus to prove that the table tilting was with them moving their fingers and not, you know, actually something occurring, kind of debunking the table tilting.
Right. And they did the same thing with apparitions actually appearing in the room. It was actually by the use of mirrors and candlelight. And using cheesecloth. There was another one with the floating head, which was actually, it was cornstarch that they would put cheesecloth, they would soak cheesecloth in it and let it harden, and they would put a picture on the inside of it and then light a candle, and it would glow, and this picture would be illuminated, and it was just this floating head. So, I mean, there's a lot of fraud out there, especially throughout history. Seances have been a joke for a long time because of that. Socially and mainstream, when you think of a seance, what do you think? You think of this gypsy-looking woman with all these bangles and a head wrap and candles everywhere and her going into these convulsions and changing her voice.
Yeah.
That's what we see because the amount of fraud that has occurred, that's what we have accustomed it to as a joke.
Yeah, all that stage magicians basically is what it amounts to when they're doing all that fraud.
Right. It's just a sleight of hand.
Now, have you heard of, I've never heard of this, as far as like items used for communication besides like the tables and stuff, trumpets. During the 19th century,
The trumpet, it's called the spiritual trumpet, right?
Right.
And it was a very unusual accessory that it wasn't widely used, but it was it resembled like a horn or a telescope or, I mean, it was just a really long tube, right? And they were believed to amplify the whispers of the dead. So what they would do is they would place this horn, this trumpet, and most of the time the medium would whisper, you know, in the dark, and everyone was like, oh my goodness, I hear a ghost.
That's what it said, that they would just whispered voices of spirits to audible range, magnified the whispered voices. But, like,
I really don't believe that the spirit trumpet is a real thing that could be used, because it was originally designed to work with the manifestation cabinet, right? A hose would go from the trumpet and it would go under the carpet into a hole underneath the manifestation cabinet, and the medium would blow into it or speak into it, gruffing their voice or disguising their voice while the trumpet sat outside of the manifestation cupboard or manifestation closet. And the audience would only be seeing this trumpet and the sound coming from it. They wouldn't be seeing the hose or anything like that. So to me, it was just another form, another tool of cheap
kind of
stage magic.
Yeah. And it's sad that it got that start, that beginning, and that history at the start of it. But I think, like, it's really evolved, like you said, and taken off. And, like, in Austin here, we have a great First Spiritualist Church that meets and does healing and readings and stuff. It's amazing. So, it's definitely, I mean, Austin obviously is more liberal, so we have more here. But I'd be interested to know how widespread it is across the U.S.
Say that again.
Oh, I said I would be interested to see how widespread the spiritual churches are across the U.S. Like, we have them here in Austin, a handful, you know, that are really amazing and do healing and readings and stuff. And it's just about 20 people in an old home that is called a church, and we do a little singing, but it's healing and readings. And I'm just interested how many other states have that and how widespread that has become.
Well, I mean, we've even become so comfortable and accustomed to it. Modern day seances aren't what we think they are anymore. They're not these round table gatherings of 5 and 10 people. John Edwards is a great example of the modern day seance. He sits in a studio and he tells people, I'm getting this person talking to me, and they're telling me this. The Long Island Medium is another great example. And there are frauds out there even to today who are using that as a means in which to get something. Sylvia Brown is a great example of that. For years,
yeah,
she was on the Montel Williams show, and then she was found to be a fraud.
I am very disappointed in her now with the Long Island Medium. How do you feel about her? Do you feel she's genuine in what she does?
Well, I haven't seen enough of her, and I've never met, what is her name, Angela Caputo?
Yeah, I went to one of her shows. Yeah, I think it is Caputo. Yeah. I've never met her. I've met her, like, one-on-one, but I've seen the shows, went to her one of her shows, and she's very humble and very genuine seeming to me, and involving the family and... I don't know. I don't get a bad vibe or a bad, you know, and she seems spot on. I mean, you know, when she's talking to people, I mean, she's giving details, like very accurate details, like things that nobody else would know. Like, for example, when I went to her show, she was very hesitant, but she delicately said, you know, your son, basically he was decapitated in an MVC, a motor vehicle accident. And she was trying to say that without, because there's a big audience and the family member, of course, is in tears. But, you know, she said it in a way and she caught herself and stuff. So she didn't like come out completely, but I caught on to what she was saying. And the family member was like, yeah, that's absolutely what happened. And so they, you know, she continued on, but she's spot on with where she was during
Teresa
the show
Caputo.
With everybody. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, you never
Teresa
know.
Teresa Caputo.
Believe, you know? Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think she
does a lot of writing, doesn't she? And then there's also, have you seen as far as the writing, the young man that does the famous people? Young gay guy, but he's called like the Hollywood Medium.
Tyler Henry?
Yes. So another one that I love because he writes. Yeah, if you've seen him scribbling in his book, he's a writer like that, you know, just, and that's how he gets his information. And always detailed, always spot on. Doesn't know where he's going. He's just dropped off at random people's houses and, you know, gives them a reading. And that's his medium. That's his, you know, his way of communicating.
Yeah. I mean, everybody has their own unique way of communicating and their own, I mean, we've said this many, many, many times, that there are no two mediums that are the same. But I do believe that there are real mediums out there. And myself, I have been scrutinized and, you know, called insane or crazy. And that's
fine. But I can
vouch
for that, Sarah and I. You know, we've seen your
that
work.
That I'm crazy?
No, you might be a little crazy, but we've seen your work and your accuracy and know that you are spot on with everything that you say. So, yeah, there's no question there.
But the thing is that so many people fraud and trick others to believing them and to getting something out of them that it ruins that validity for the rest of us.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, many famous people have tried seances. I mean, you got Franklin D. Roosevelt. You got Abraham Lincoln. Look at Lincoln was doing it in the White House. Can you imagine the White House?
Oh, yeah. He held them weekly.
Yeah, because his wife was very spiritualist. And then he saw his doppelganger, which I included in my book that I'm releasing hopefully October, the planned date of October. But his wife really got him into it and was like, hey, we really need to do these dances and stuff. And so she kind of drug him in that direction after seeing his doppelganger. So, yeah, it's quite interesting. And it was in the red room, where the red room of the White House is. Now I want to go to the red room. I don't know if it's open to the public, but if you can ever go to the White House and enter the red room, that's where the seances were. So many famous people. We've already touched on the trickery and the different types and the pendulums. I mean, it's another source and no different than the rest, like you mentioned, you know, just swinging it yes or no in different directions or a maybe. The dowsy rod.
If we go into the Americas and we start talking about, like, America during the Civil War, they were using wells, water wells. So if you leaned back in a water well with a mirror, it would tell you your future. It would allow you to get messages from beyond. I mean, there was all kinds of things people were using to communicate with the other side.
Yeah, and you know, something I found interesting, like one of the big myths that I was reading was that there has to be this proper atmosphere for the faces and that you have to dress in black and you have to have candles with an extinguisher ready and handy. And like, that's just, you know, I mean, who the hell comes up with this? You know, like,
right.
You don't have
because
to dress in black.
They had to create an environment. Like, for example, with ectoplasm. With the ectoplasm, they stated that the lights had to be very low, that almost little to none at all for light. And the reason for this being is because the light would dissolve the ectoplasm. But the reality is that you could actually see it was muslin and other forms of fabric coming out of a person as opposed to this earthly spiritual thing that was coming out of a person's body.
So it's to basically help with the fraud is why they were saying that.
Right. Basically to help with the illusion.
Yeah. And then of course they do mention, you know, not indulging in alcoholic beverages, which I think everybody in the paranormal agrees, you know, that's kind of a common sense thing. You don't want to be drunk trying to do a seance. It's not good.
Right.
But with the lighting,
well,
thing,
I mean,
you know, I'm
looking serious. Real communication. If you are impaired, you are not mentally protected from something that could harm you. And you're opening yourself up for that kind of negativity. And that's just not where you want to be mentally, emotionally, or spiritually. And it can actually do some physical harm too. So you just want to make sure that you're completely aware, you're completely invested and engaged. And alcohol and any other form of mind-altering substance doesn't allow that.
Right. Kind of shuts you off. But I do want to mention, you know, like the light dimming, like the candles, not candles per se, but light dimming. They say that, you know, you can see shadows, and with the night vision, that it's better. So there are reasons, like in the paranormal, when you're just simply investigating, to have light dimmed and have it dark is not to make it spooky, it's to get better evidence. But like right. In that situation with a seance, it's completely different. And like you mentioned, that was just an old thing to fabricate and false, you know, not falsify, but, you know, fake, you know, the whole experience. So two different things, you know, not to get confused. And then, you know, when it comes to like using items, like for seances, say the Ouija board, what about disposal? What's your opinion on that? Because like there's a long list you can find, you know, burn them, dispose them, bury them upside down. You know, others say you can sell them.
Are you talking about the disposal?
Of the boards. Like, if say you decide you want to get rid of one, I want your opinion on that. Like, what's your thought? If you decide, okay, I'm done with seances or using boards, the proper disposal of that.
I think different people have different methods of disposing the board. Like you said, burning the board, there's cutting the board up, burying the board, blasting the board with sage. Generally, I've seen that as an opening and closing on a seance with the Ouija board. There's gifting it to someone else because it's apparently it separates your ownership of the board. So, I mean, there are different variances in closing or getting rid of a Ouija board that I've heard of. I've heard that you had to bury the board face down, and then you have to take the dial and put that somewhere completely different and bury it.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's not one general disposal system. I think everybody does what they think has worked for them.
I would be interested to see what a demonologist, their take on that, just because of the negative aspect and what could happen or possibly happen if you do it wrong, or can you even do it wrong? It would be interesting to bring a demonologist on the show and ask him that as one of the questions, you know, how would you properly dispose of this? Do you have an opinion on it? And if he's had experiences with that, that'd be pretty interesting.
So yeah, I've heard of people who have tried different things and it didn't work, and things got worse when they did.
Like the burning, if you don't ever burn it or cut it up or anything like that. So I don't know, you know,
I don't
have one, but I have been wanting to get like a nice, really nice one, but then I thought, okay, if I get rid of it, what am I going to do? I've got 15 choices on disposal here. Which is the right answer? You know?
And there are so many. There's always like that tall tale or you shouldn't do this because of this. Like the biggest one I've always thought was just insane was, if you burn the board and you hear it scream, you've less than 36 hours to live.
Oh, I hadn't heard that one, too.
Yeah, and there are people who say that the only way you can get rid of a Ouija board is you have to break it in 7 pieces and sprinkle it with holy water. But what if you don't believe in holy water? You know?
Yeah. I've heard of that, as putting holy water on that.
The only true consensus I've ever come across with a Ouija board is everybody agrees that you should never leave the planchet, the dial, on the board if you're not using it.
Oh, I haven't heard that. Let me make a quick note here. somewhere. And there's museums too, you know, with Ouija boards. So if you ever want to turn one over, there are museums that you can gift them to. That might be an option.
Yeah.
Have you heard of, just kind of off topic, I think it was like Murch, Robert Murch. He built the largest Ouija board ever in the world. And it was the top of a building. He took the top of this massive building and turned the entire roof into a Ouija board. So he made the, what's that book called? Like if you do more than
the chairman of the board? Wasn't it chairman of the board?
Guinness. He made the Guinness World Record, whatever it's called, for the largest Ouija board. So I can note there. And then of course, like, there's a million movies associated with, you know, the topic, movies and TV and books. I mean, you got Stephen King and so many comic books, Simpsons, movies, The Exorcist. I mean, there's so many that get at you, seances and boards and all that kind of associated stuff.
This should be one of our topics, because the Ouija board has so much history in it. And it has ties to a lot of different cultures and a lot of different religions. So I wonder if maybe we should do an entire show on the Ouija board, because it is a huge subject. It has got a vast history. It has a cultural tie to so many different cultures. Maybe it's something we should do in the future.
Definitely. We could add it even to next season when we're working on, like, next seasons, because, like, I mean, it's on television shows, like, you know, The West Wing and some just common shows. I mean, like, things you wouldn't think of. What Lies Beneath, a movie from 2000. I Am Zozo. I mean, like, just there was no film that was called Ouija. I mean, and comic books, and there was a show called For What It's Worth.
A children's toy shop sells Ouija boards.
Yeah. Well, did you hear that they do a blessing? Like, they actually pay somebody to, like, do some type of blessing, or I guess you would call it, prior to packaging the board and selling it.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I can't remember what's the name of the company that makes those Ouija boards. I don't know off the top of my head.
Isn't it
Ouija board maker? And it's slipping my mind. Let me see here. It is a toy company, like you mentioned. Sheesh, I don't know.
Hasbro.
Yes. Is it Hasbro? I was thinking it was someone else, though. But maybe it is Hasbro. It's a different company. And maybe they sold it off to Hasbro. I don't know how long Hasbro's had it. I guess it's trademarked by them and everything. But they were doing blessings and stuff prior to it. I was pulling that up to see if it mentions, like, it selling it to them. It doesn't specify.
Excuse me.
And this is just looking real quick to find the name of that. I swear it was another company that originally made it prior to them. And it was a very common company. Robert Murch, he's the one that built that huge, massive, and I would love to have him on the show as a guest sometime. I'll have to reach out to him because he's got, a massive collection, vast history, and just that's what he's known for. But he would be an amazing guest.
Was that a question that someone asked, or?
No, I was just when I was looking for the name of the kids that made the board, the company, because I swear there was a group before the one you mentioned, and it actually popped up for Robert Murch's name, which is the one that built that massive board on the top of the building. And I was just saying he would be a great person to interview regarding the Ouija board and the history and all that stuff too, like in the future. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to find it. But I swear it was another company prior to the one that you had mentioned. You had mentioned Hasbro, but... yeah, I'll never find it. Maybe by the next time we do the next show. But I guess before there was another company that made it. It would probably take some digging, though. Oh, well. Anyways. Yeah, and then the board, too. I'm sure you've seen it. I don't remember what the age range on it, but it's like 8 and up or something like that, you know, for kids, basically. Like, okay, kids can summon them, you know. It's really good. Because I remember, like, even in elementary and middle school.
Okay, Charles Kennard owned Kennard Novelty Company, which was the initial manufacturer of the Ouija board, and a surveyor named Colonel Washington Bowie were the initial investors, and they filed for patent protection on the Ouija board on May 28, 1890. So they're credited with inventing the Ouija board, even though it had already existed, right?
Okay.
Yeah. So according to Charles Kennard, he was using the board with a group of others, including Elijah Bond's sister-in-law, Helen Peters. They asked the board what they should call it and received the response, Ouija. So they actually asked the board what to call it, and the board named itself.
Okay.
When they asked what it meant, the board reportedly said that it meant good luck. And then it was passed in 1901 via an employee Bond named William Fold had taken over the Ouija business. And then in 1919, Colonel Washington Bowie, he was the final shareholder. He gave up his right, or he kept his rights and the concept until 1927, when he fell from a roof of a factory, and the Ouija board supposedly told him to build this factory, and he fell from the roof. The Fold estate would hold on to the business until 1966, and then it would be sold to Parker Brothers, which would Ouija Products line and all of its affiliates, and its rights to Hasbro in 1991.
And so
they used to sell them for a dollar.
So now what year
the
did the Parker
sold
Brothers
for a dollar.
Take on, is that, what time did the Parker Brothers sell the board? What year?
Say it again.
What year did the Parker Brothers establish or become sellers?
Okay, so Fold's estate would hold on to the business until 1966. And then in 1966, it was sold to Parker Brothers, which would then sell the Ouija product line and all its affiliated rights to Hasbro in 1991.
Yeah. And see, that's what
And Hasbro currently holds. And Hasbro currently holds the trademark rights to Ouija.
Okay, that makes sense. Now the Parker Brothers are the ones that would do the blessing. Now I don't know if Hasbro does, if they carried on that tradition or not.
Fingers crossed they do.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a nice thing for them to do. I mean, to acknowledge that, hey, this, but I mean, it's kind of weird. At the same time, they say, okay, here, this is for an 8-year-old, but at the same time, we know it's dangerous. Let's get the blessing before we sell it, you know? So it's kind of like a double standard,
right?
You know? But hey, it is what it is, I guess.
It is what it is.
Okay, we're coming to the end of our show. Lisa, what's our topic next week?
That is a very good question. Let me pull that on up here. I should have had that up prior. Give me 2 seconds and I can tell you. Let's see, today is the 22nd. You know what? We don't have anything until August 5th. Is that the next week? We don't have a show, but August 5th, which is the following week, following Wednesday, we have sleep paralysis. Oh, I'm sorry. Wait, August 5th. It's the Martha Lights.
Okay.
Martha Lights and reports. So unless we decide to change topics, but we'll look into that. But it should be Martha Lights and the reports of that, which is the basically UFO, ufology.
It's out of this world.
Do we have a sound effect for that, Aaron?
I don't know. I don't think so. But if we will find one before that, have like a ET going, ouch, ouch.
Going home or, yeah. And it's the sad thing is our platform and studio only allows so many uploads as far as audio. And I don't know, we probably have like a dozen uploaded right now. So I don't know if we'll be able to upload anymore. So
that's okay. I'll make my own sound effect.
You can do it in the background, play in the background. That works too.
Right. Beep, 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 beep.
Or some kind of like sound of the UFO taking off or something. I don't know. But yeah.
Right.
We'll figure out something for sound effects for you guys next week. And I think that's it. So we'll be back August 5th. You're going to be around August 5th. Are you joining me? Week after?
Probably, yes. Because I'm on every other week.
All right. You'll have Marley and Scoot next week and possibly some others if they decide to join us. So we'll talk to you guys week after next. That's August 5th. We are bumping the time up an hour, so instead of 7:30 Central Standard Time, it will be 8:30 Central Standard Time going forward, and I'll get all the episodes updated to reflect that. And I guess that's it for the evening. Y'all have a good night. Aaron, love you, and talk to you
next week. Love you, too. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, absolutely. Night, everybody.